Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie and John here after a week of me not having a voice.
Yeah. I mean, it's back. I'd say like 70%, 75%.
Yeah, I think I'll be okay once I get yapping a little bit. I haven't talked a lot in the last little bit.
We called a football game this past weekend, and that was a struggle bus for you. You did great. I just can't believe you stuck it out.
Appreciate you picking me up, getting back on the mend. Never really felt that bad, just couldn't talk. So my family was very grateful.
I think I gave it to you. I felt kind of similar there for a while, but I think we're both on the mend. Man, if you like 8 years ago when we started, I felt like I was sick all winter long for a couple of years, and I'm hoping I don't get back to that. But regardless, we're here and we appreciate you guys sticking around with us. Jamie, any housekeeping before we get going?
Yeah, I got a couple 5-star reviews over on Apple Podcasts I'd like to recognize. One from Han Pearl, H-A-N-P-E-A-R-L. I was recommended to listen to this podcast, and it did not disappoint. Love the host. The narration of each case makes you think and keeps you listening. Thanks, Han Pearl. And this is from Halloween Girl, H-L-L. WNGRL. So I think it's Halloween Girl. I've gone through all the Dateline podcast episodes and several other popular shows. So I was searching for a true crime podcast equally as good, stumbled upon yours, and was very pleased. Very well done. And I'm picky.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being picky and leaving us in the group there.
Picking us.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Also want to say thank you to Rebecca, who joined us over on Patreon. We dropped a bonus episode that's only available to Patreon members just on November the 1st. And that one was about the mysterious circumstances around John Wilkes Booth. Now, we don't question whether or not he killed Abraham Lincoln. We do wonder if he got away with it and maybe he lived out his life quietly afterwards, or did police and authorities get the right guy? So if you want to hear more about that, go check it out. There's also, like I said, 7 or 8 years worth of bonus content over there that you will have never heard before. So go check it out.
Today's case is just fascinating on a number of fronts. And I've known about this one for a while and looking forward to diving in. John, why don't you get us rolling?
Yeah, for sure. We're going to be talking about Erin Valeni. So her family remember her being a tenacious child. As kids, I love this part, she and a friend would actually write a newsletter that called out neighbors for shenanigans like smoking and other things in the neighborhood. And it also documented all the litter that they found around the neighborhood. Now, remember, her name is Erin and not Karen.
Right.
But it feels like as a little kid, she was a follower of rules and wanted the whole neighborhood to know if someone was breaking those. In middle school, as a homework assignment, she built a database for a scuba diving school. That's pretty awesome, especially as a middle schooler. When the assignment was over, she started charging the business to maintain the database. This is like a middle school entrepreneur, right? I mean, yeah. She is making this database, and she's like, well, you know, I made it, but I'm not giving it to you. So if you want to use it, my services don't come free.
That's kind of like you give somebody the first set of drugs for free. Yeah.
I love that. She continued creating databases for businesses during her years at Georgetown University. So this is something she picked up and really stuck with it. In college, she would have graduated with a perfect GPA, except she had an A- in Mandarin. That's acceptable. And I would have never passed that class. When Erin was 18, she met her husband. His name was Harrison Weinstein at a hotel in Quebec while she was on a ski trip with her family.
Her first job after college was an associate position in a private equity firm called Summit Partners. When she was there, she learned how to cold call, to source deals for the partners, so moved over from the database side to the sales side. Colleagues would say that Aaron had a complete refusal to fail, I think, which is something you want in any motivated employee, but also sales is kind of a brutal business. So you got to find somebody who can persist through that. And she was that type of person. She spent her evening studying the markets in her office in Palo Alto, California. She wanted to get better during the day, so she did not rest in the evenings. After 4 years at that job, she was ready to start something new, and she wanted to start something on her own. At this same time, her husband was finishing his doctoral studies and had been offered a fellowship at a veterans hospital in Utah. Since Harrison had followed Aaron out to California, she felt like it was her turn to do the same thing. So she moved with her husband to Salt Lake City, Utah in 2012.
While this was not exactly a hub for startups, Aaron was determined to make an impression in the tech world in Utah. She had a booming voice and absolutely no filter. And Aaron soon became the linchpin of the SLC tech scene. She gathered entrepreneurs and companies into meeting rooms and in bars in the area. Aaron took a job as a head of product for a little company called Overstock.com. In her time off, she loved spending time outside tubing, hiking, and even climbing in and out of canyons. She is just a go-getter. In 2015, Aaron was talking to Amar Khan. He was an entrepreneur in Pakistan and that she had worked with in the past. And the two of them founded a company called Tinker. Have you ever heard of that company?
I have, actually.
Yeah, me too. Tinker had 120 employees, mostly in Pakistan, who designed, developed, and scaled technology for different companies. Khan oversaw the company's operations in Pakistan, and Aaron was responsible for landing and keeping customers.
Yeah, you mentioned the networking piece in Salt Lake City, but she's saying, you know what, if I can't find the people I need here, I'll go as far as I need to. So she recruited business partners internationally. But 5 years into running Tinker, she was feeling lonely as the only employee that wasn't in Pakistan. She tried to find other ways to fill her need for human interaction. She met clients for coffee. She joined a co-working space in Salt Lake City, like at WeWork. And she started having art hours on Friday nights at her home where friends could come and bring their own supplies and make art. She used this time to be with people, to talk through her business ideas, and to get social interaction that she really wasn't getting a lot of at work. Her husband would say that she had a million half-baked ideas and mini projects and prototypes just floating around. Aaron would spend car rides talking about projects or have people over to brainstorm over a bottle of wine. And she knew what she was doing. Her close friends said Tinker was profitable and never took outside capital, which is wild if you've ever done anything with a startup. It was always funded from her savings and then from revenue coming in from the outside. It sounds, John, that she's just got a motor that won't quit, really focused on the next big thing.
That reminds me of somebody else I know, ironically enough. Aaron also often talked and theorized about the latest technology, like drug-free, implant-free, mind-controlling technologies, brainwave interface technology. This woman was not only an entrepreneur, but she was like thinking big time, new cutting-edge technology kind of stuff. Her company website linked to a company called CTRL Labs. I think of it as Control Labs because yeah, it's like the control key on a keyboard.
Yep.
It was the Center for Neuroscience and Behavior Studies. She was also thinking of financing a startup accelerator inside her company and also wanted to start a clothing line for professional women. I mean, this woman is into everything from clothing to neuroscience. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
Aaron is incredible. I mean, her mind is just working so quickly, and you love the ambition to chase these things. I think a lot of people have good ideas, but they don't always make it to the planning floor.
She was looking for some more guidance in the late summer of 2019, so she talked to a fellow Utah entrepreneur named Scott Rafferty. She was hoping to find a business coach, and Rafferty's coach was about to hold a retreat in California. On October 1st, 2019, Aaron flew from Salt Lake City to Orange County, California, to attend a 3-day seminar for business owners called the Create Powerful. It was described as, quote, an intense, immersive life course designed for individuals who are committed to personal and professional growth, becoming more powerful leaders of themselves and others, and experiencing their relationships in a powerful way, end quote. In the evening, Rafferty saw Erin. She was mingling with guests at a sunset dinner that was kind of during the conference, and she seemed, by all accounts, to be in a great mood.
My goodness, John. Like, I feel like you and I do a lot. We have podcasts. We do sports broadcasting. We teach Sunday school. We volunteer at some of the same places.
We also have full-time jobs and families.
Yeah, we have a lot of kids between our two families. Like, I don't know. I feel like I have other ideas, but there are things that come up, and I'm like, yeah, I ain't got time for that.
I've got more ideas than I do time, more money.
And it seemed like Erin really chased every idea. I mean, maybe she had some she didn't, but she's all out there going for all of these. So,
and you would think this seminar would be right up her alley. I mean, she kind of felt, you know, she worked alone. Basically, every other employee that worked with Overstock was in Pakistan. So it looked like she was trying to manufacture ways to really just kind of have good relationships.
Yeah, I think that group was with Tinker. Everybody was in Pakistan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, that was not Overstock.
But yeah, she, I don't know, she needed that. Even in her seeking social interaction with the art nights and stuff, business always found its way into the conversation, which kudos to her. A little jealous that she had that drive and made so much happen. After that seminar was over on the morning of October 3rd, she flew to the Bay Area for yet another tech conference in Monterey for founders and investors. She spent that weekend having small reunions with people she used to work with, meeting new people. Her friend said that she talked excitedly about her new projects and her new business deals coming up. She also did some shopping. According to her credit card statements, while she was in Monterey, Erin spent several hundred dollars on vinyl records, which was a little odd because she wasn't known to collect those and she didn't have a turntable that anybody knew about, but still not, in my mind, anything concerning about that type of purchase. She had planned to fly back to Salt Lake City on Monday, October 7th, to attend the Women Tech Awards ceremony. And it was leading up to that trip when things started to get weird, and we don't know where she ended up.
Erin would call her family during her trips. She would call her husband. She would call her parents. And she actually told them that she was excited to get home and put her new ideas to work. The seminar seemed to really fuel her interest in hiring a local team, which would then allow her the time and energy to pursue other interests, all the while still running Tinker. The day before her planned flight, she had dinner with her first boss, and he said that Erin was really excited about all that she had gained at the workshops. The former boss said that she cared deeply about Tinker and it mattered a lot to her identity. She was very committed to the continued path there, but she realized that she could do both. She could had elevated enough as an executive and entrepreneur that she realized she didn't have to do only just one thing. She, in her mind, thought any normal human being can do one thing. She wanted to be that at Tinker and do other things as well. The day of the flight, Erin saw her former manager, Dean Jacobson. After that, Erin called her parents after meeting her friend when she was on her way to the airport.
Now, the first thing she told her parents on the phone was that she couldn't find her rental car. She said she thought she had parked it around the corner, but when she went to get in it, it wasn't there. Now, her parents didn't stay on the phone for a long time. They were having their anniversary dinner, and she had a car to find. So they were like, oh, that's kind of weird. I hope you find it soon. Keep in touch with us. And they went back to their dinner, and then they called her when they left the restaurant to check in. At that point, she had found her rental car, and told them that she was on her way to the San Jose International Airport, but they said that something just seemed off. They said she was speaking fast, she was talking erratically, and at one point she said to her parents, "It's all a game. It's a thought experiment. We're in the Matrix." She also said she was worried she was going to miss her flight, and again, that's part of the being erratic and jumping from topic to topic. Her mom asked if she had taken any drugs or had been drinking, and Aaron said no. One minute, she was talking about Thanksgiving plans, and the next minute, she was back on the Matrix. Aaron's mother called Aaron's husband to say that he needed to call and check on her. Until about midnight, Aaron was continuously either talking to her parents, her brother, or her husband on the phone. And again, John, they're all pretty worried about her. And she keeps going back to this idea of the Matrix. Now, in case somebody doesn't know, which I hope you do, it's fantastic. There was a movie called The Matrix, which was essentially about humans' physical bodies being plugged into a computer and living in a simulation. Those conversations obviously still happen today, and rumors and theories and all that. But this didn't seem to, like, she wasn't a conspiracy person. And The Matrix, I mean, yes, she was in the tech world, but just seems like a leap for her to jump to that.
Well, I mean, even her mother realized this is not normal behavior for her. So she asked if she was on drugs or had been drinking. She knew something wasn't right. I mean, and even to the point where she called Aaron's husband, and she definitely seemed worried about her daughter.
And, you know, they knew her well. Like, this wasn't a situation. I know people who rarely talk to their parents. I call my mother every day. That's the relationship that we have. And she had that kind of relationship with her parents. So they were certainly worried. And I don't know. There are people out there that believe we do live in a simulation. There are people who believe we live on a flat earth. There are people out there that think we've never been to the moon. Of those three groups, I'm in one of them. We'll just leave that aside for now. But she didn't seem to be that type of person.
Well, and even if she was that kind of person, her mother just thought that something was off, right? Like, you can believe that we're in a simulation if you want to. But when she was talking to her mom, whatever beliefs she had before that call, she knew this was different than what her daughter was currently saying. You know what I mean?
And bouncing back and forth between topics just wasn't her style.
Talking,
even though she was
fast and erratic. Yeah, it just seemed something was off. Parents know their kids. And you can tell, even with nonverbal language, just looking at them, I can tell if something's going on.
Yep.
Her husband, Harrison, also asked the local police there to conduct a welfare check on Aaron. So they called her, and she told the officer that she was just joking around and there was no problem. At some point, Aaron's phone died, and all calls were going straight to voicemail. She ended up missing her flight from San Jose. Now, remember, she's been telling everyone she's excited to get back home and get this other, like, startup up and running. And now she's missing her flight. It just seems kind of out of the ordinary. The next morning, Aaron's family reported her missing with the San Jose Police Department. But the police refused to file a missing persons report. They told her that Aaron was an adult, so it would be treated as a voluntary missing persons case. They said that she could have just taken off for a couple of days without telling anyone. She's a grown adult woman. She can do that if she wants to. Aaron's husband flew out to San Jose the following morning, and a couple of days later, her parents joined him, and they hired a private investigator to help them because they were getting nowhere with the police. Her face was posted all over Facebook as someone who was missing in the Bay Area in case anyone had seen her on a hiking trail or around the community. One friend asked a drone hobbyist to fly over the areas where Aaron's phone had last pinged, not far from the airport, just to see if they could find her car or anything that looked like Aaron could have been there.
This is something that comes up often in the cases we talk about. I feel like it's been extra often lately, but about the missing persons thing, I wonder, so many police departments have this policy of, we are not going to consider an adult missing for this many hours, or we're not going to go look or whatever. I'm assuming that came as a fact of, or as a result of them getting a ton of reports and not having time to follow up on all of them. But I would love to see a study done, and maybe there has been one, of reports of missing persons. how many ended up being voluntary missing persons, how much time was actually used by police enforcement, quote unquote, wasted by law enforcement. So I don't know. I need to be convinced that this is the right way to go. While Erin was missing, there wasn't any activity on her credit card or debit cards. Their missing persons Facebook page said that Erin should be considered a vulnerable person at severe risk. Not only had she disappeared, which was very unlike her, she also was acting erratically. A post on the page said that it was completely possible to have a sudden onset of symptoms like this for a variety of mental health and physical reasons, even if there's not been previous symptoms. The page also said, Harrison is also a psychologist, and Erin's mother is a nurse. It's difficult for me to understand why the police are not giving greater credence to people who have experience with people in psychiatric and medical crises and who absolutely believe that Erin's last calls indicate that she was in peril. And on Saturday, October 12th, a volunteer found Erin's rental car a few blocks from where her phone was located. It was on a residential street, and it was pretty close to the San Jose airport. And the body of 33-year-old Erin Valeni was laying there in the back seat. Obviously not the outcome you want to see here. And what do you think about the idea that maybe police should have listened to them because of their backgrounds? I feel like that gets a little dangerous because then you start dismissing people's backgrounds if it's not as much.
Yeah, I mean, anytime we cover a missing person's case and the police didn't take it as serious as we feel necessary, of course, we have 20/20 hindsight. So, but yeah, I mean, I feel like if someone calls in and says, hey, you know, my relative was acting different and something was off about them and she was speaking incoherently and about things that doesn't make any sense and now we can't find her, I feel like that should be enough of a red flag to deem that person missing. I don't know. Maybe it's a lack of resources, and if you took every single case, you're going to pull yourself so thin you can't do anything. But every person is valuable. It doesn't matter your background, your socioeconomic status. Every human being is worthy of having another person care about their well-being. So obviously, I think police should have taken this more serious. Let's talk about what kind of situation they found Erin in. Her body did not show any signs of physical harm. And there was, of course, an investigation or autopsy, and there was no evidence of foul play. So basically, her death was ruled not as a homicide, not as a suicide, but really just unknown. They don't know what happened to her. Of course, they did blood tests. Those were all negative for prescription drugs or any other substances. Her parents told the media that they thought Erin had suffered from some kind of manic episode, but Erin had no history of mental health problems or any kind of substance abuse patterns. Everyone agreed that she surrounded herself with friends. She was not the type to bottle up her feelings or to hide anything. Rafferty, you know, one of her friends in the business world, said that Erin had talked about quitting her business, but that she never really meant it, that she was just kind of joking around. She told everyone that she felt responsible for the welfare of more than 130 engineers and their families, and all of those folks lived on the other side of the world with her Tinker company. Talking about Erin, her husband said that there was never any history of anything like this before. She had no mental health diagnoses, no prior hospitalizations. There was no substance abuse. She had never been arrested. And she had as clear of a record as you could possibly get. And he would go on to say, this is incredibly unlike her. She is an extremely high-achieving, very successful business owner and individual. This just seems so out of the norm for her. And there's no sign of foul play. No, you know, it doesn't seem like she was murdered. I found it odd that she was in her back seat of the car and not driving or in the, you know, in the driver's seat. You think you have found her, so you're going to have answers, but is it possible they have found her, but then have more questions than they originally did? It sounds insane, but it's the case.
I think it's absolutely true that they had more questions afterwards, and I don't know. That has to be just as frustrating because beforehand you have all these questions and you find her body. So obviously you're then dealing with grief and the trauma of that. So it's a terrible situation for this family to be in. And I think sometimes even if there is a history of some kind of mental illness, there's at least a hint of, well, maybe this is what happened, but here it's like, there's no clue. I am glad they ruled it in the reason of death being undetermined so that they can continue to look into it if they need to, if they found any signs of foul play. It took months to get the autopsy report back. The San Jose Medical Examiner's Office determined that she died of sudden death in the setting of an acute manic episode. The report offered no further explanation for her death besides natural causes. So that's tough for me to wrap my mind around. In my mind, something, a part of your body has to shut down for you to stop being alive. They explained it that a manic episode can come with feelings of euphoria, racing thoughts, feelings of being connected and being kind of out of body. That's why some of the Matrix conversation may have come out. And maybe there was some depression and irritability built into all this. They did note that Erin had a previous diagnosis of a thyroid condition, and she took medication for that. And obviously, we know any chemical imbalance in the body can cause issues in a number of ways. Blood samples did not help to offer any type of conclusion, saying there was an unpredictably high level of anything in her blood. Authorities reviewed Erin's texts and emails in the days before her flight home and found that she was showing symptoms of a manic episode. A psychiatrist who runs a clinic for the study and treatment of bipolar disorders at Stanford University said, "A manic episode is not a disorder on its own, though it's the principal symptom of bipolar disorder and, honestly, other things." That's me, not him. Back to him. "The contrast from the highs to lows feels more dramatic to a person suffering from bipolar disorder. His research and other studies suggest that suicide attempts are common in these situations. Studies show that people with bipolar disorder have higher rates of death from natural causes like heart attack and stroke and at an earlier age. But again, Erin was never diagnosed with any of these things. Is a manic episode a potential symptom of bipolar disorder? Yes, but it's also a symptom of a number of other issues."
It just seems odd that at this stage in her life, she had she never had another episode? I mean, they said that she had never struggled with mental health. She had never had any episodes like this before. It just seems odd for this to hit so suddenly. I know that there are some personality disorders that don't manifest until your adulthood, but it feels like this is a pretty severe start to some kind of episode that this would be a mental health problem, but would also kill you.
Right.
I've never heard of that before. Now, I feel like, just me speculating, I feel like this was more of a medical emergency that probably triggered some erratic thoughts. Like, mm-hmm. If you're having, I don't know, if you feel like you're having a heart attack, maybe that's impending doom, but we don't have anything that suggests that. This is just so bizarre to me. Some people theorize that the seminars that she visited may have provoked the manic episode that we had discussed and exacerbated any emerging mental illnesses that she could have had. Some also think that she may have been the victim of a non-invasive brain machine interface, which can read intention from the brain, but can also make strong suggestions to the brain. Now, again, she is one of the smartest people that I've ever heard of. Were they doing something like this at a conference? Did someone have something they were experimenting with on her? I don't know. I think that she talked to her parents enough. Maybe she would have had a record of this, you know, in some capacity. I'm not going to put too much stock into that. What do you think?
I think she did have interest in this. I think a lot of the research that she had done with neurological disorders and things like that would would come back to ideas like this. This was potentially a way to treat mental health disorders with technology, but also it's unproven, untested, and here we are a decade later and still not really a thing. So maybe it wasn't a good idea after all, but we don't know that she was a part of any trial or test. We do know that this was an area of interest, but as far as we get, that's as far as it goes.
Some people that know her think she just had a very sudden and rapid descent into mental illness and then died by natural causes within an hour. I have, in all my time in social services, and I have never heard of anything like this at all. Some have also raised the possibility of suicide. Aaron's husband does not believe that theory. He said that when we called the police for the welfare check, we were worried that she was confused, she was vulnerable, but not that she was threatening to hurt herself. So they believe that there's more of a likelihood that she was hurt by someone else than it would be for her to have hurt herself. The people who speculated it that it may have been suicide were all entrepreneurs who said that they knew firsthand the stress and the loneliness and the feeling of, you know, you have the livelihood of so many people on your shoulders. That puts an immense amount of pressure on you. All the people who said this was could be a possibility of suicide were entrepreneurs themselves who knew that struggle. One friend of Aaron suggested that the chief executives should be subject to welfare checks because they are just under such an enormous amount of pressure. One Utah businessman said, quote, there are not a lot of founders who have been prepared with therapy. You can't just pay more. That's just not a strategy surviving founder life, end quote. So basically, when you're a founder, when you have so many people depending on you to keep things going and to keep their livelihood up, you know, maybe you just internalize that and put so much pressure on yourself and then you don't work through those feelings in therapy. Of course, that's going to be stressful. And, you know, stress can do some funny things. It can lead to health issues. I don't think it can lead to them so quickly without other signs, you know, months and months beforehand. Personally, that's just me speculating. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, obviously. So to this day, the death of Aaron Valenti remains a mystery. I hope that we can figure out what happened to her. It just doesn't seem, I don't know, it doesn't seem possible to me that this was just a sudden mental health incident that then led to her physical health detriment, you know, so quickly. That just doesn't seem real to me. I think it's more likely that something was going on with her, like, I don't know, medically, or that someone hurt her in some way that they just haven't found yet.
Right. And I think that's what her family is leaning toward, right? They have the idea that it's much more likely that somebody else did this than her hurting herself. But, A, we don't have any signs of foul play on her body, no defensive, no wounds at all, really. And B, I don't know that her manic conversations or her erratic discussion really pairs with, like, somebody else attacking her. Of course, that's possible, but I think if somebody else attacked her, that would be removed from any other medical issue. Or maybe that just made her vulnerable enough for somebody to prey on. I don't know. But I would also hope that they would find some physical signs of assault or abuse or violence if this was the wrongdoing of somebody else. Again, if it's all physical, who knows? Could this have been a chemical attack from a rival company that somebody... I don't know about that.
Yeah, I mean, they did an autopsy. I feel like if there was some kind of chemical in her body that was not supposed to be there, or in even a higher amount than should physically be there, that should have come up during an autopsy. I feel like autopsies are one of the most thorough, time-consuming, like very intentionally drawn-out processes that are done. So I feel like if there was a physical health issue or some kind of devious actions by someone else, I feel like that should come up. I wonder, was she suffocated without any kind of marks on her body? did she get overheated in a car? But I feel like even with those things, there's still going to be signs that
I would think
police would pick up on, or that an autopsy could conclude. So I've never just known anybody who's like spontaneously died.
Right.
So this is just weird to me.
Yeah. That's what makes it so weird to me too. It is obvious that something was going on, but was this something that was going on that led to a stroke or heart attack that killed her? Right. I think they would have found that in the autopsy too.
I was going to say, like, caveat is I've known people that have died because of heart attacks, but I can sit here and say that because doctors concluded they had a heart attack.
Right. So right. Right.
I've never just seen anyone drop dead and then be like, I don't know how that happened. It's just like something glitched in their body.
Yeah.
There was a glitch in the matrix of her body. And I don't know how to explain it.
I don't either. I'm hard pressed to say that there was any foul play. I don't believe that. I do think it's much more likely that there was a medical issue that caused her death that they are unable to figure out so far, that also caused some kind of mental break. So I think in my mind, that makes the most logical sense of what happened here. What do you think?
Let me ask you a question. I know that you are an adult man and you have a wife. But do you go to the doctor and do you fill out, like, do you ever give consent for the doctors to speak to your wife if something needed to be spoken of?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's on that list.
Yeah. I just wonder, like,
I think she is that list. But yeah.
Yeah. Like mine, that is my list too. But like, if you don't fill out the form or you don't want anyone to know, including your spouse, it is very likely, or it is very possible, I should say, that maybe she was suffering from some kind of mental illness that she just never spoke about. Maybe she was prescribed medicine for it at one time and then stopped taking it. I mean, just because her husband doesn't know that she had taken medicine in the past doesn't mean it wasn't true. So I'm not saying that that's definitely the case. I'm just saying, I think there are scenarios out there where perhaps even the ones most closest to you don't know what you're fully struggling with unless you sit down and talk with them. And then doctors aren't just going to call and say, hey, actually, I treated her 10 years ago for right. this and this and this. That is breaking the law because of HIPAA.
No, that's a good point and something I didn't think about. So I think that's certainly possible as well. I think if you're a family member, you want to think that's not possible. You want to think, no, she would have told me. But, I mean, that's not always the truth. Her family's still seeking answers. So if they can find out anything medically about any potential odd research she was involved in, or, you know, any medical history they're able to legally get a hold of that would help, I'm sure they would love to have any answers whatsoever, because that's better than no answer at all.
Absolutely. I hope that one day we can report that there has been some closure to this case and that the family knows what happened. But until that happens, you know, there's really not much else to report on this one. So hopefully the next time we update you, maybe on Patreon, will be about a break in this case and hopefully know what's happened to her.
Yeah. If I'm betting, I'm going to say it's some kind of mental issue. You would have to bring up some pretty compelling evidence to show me that foul play was involved. But if you got it, I'll look at it.
Absolutely. Guys, we appreciate you so much tuning in each and every week. Don't forget, we have several things. We have episodes of True Crime to Go. Those come out on Wednesdays and Fridays. If you need a little palate cleanser from crime, on Thursdays, Jamie and I release a show called Bless Their Hearts. It's an hour of comedy. It's an hour of anything but true crime. It's a lot of fun, so go check that out if you haven't. Again, that one's called Bless Their Hearts.
No, we really appreciate you guys and all your support. Keep those reviews coming in. Keep those case recommendations coming in, and we'll continue to deliver cases.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.